Headline inflation down to its lowest level in 3 years, and the federal government hasn't ruled out changes to negative gearing. Hello, I'm Harrison Peterson of the latest from NIRS News. Headline inflation has fallen to 2.7%, its lowest point in 3 years. That's according to the Bureau of Statistics' August figures. The ABS says the decrease is due to government electricity rebates coming into effect in July. The data is unlikely to sway the RBA when it meets again to decide the cash rate in November. The central bank will be considering the more detailed September quarter numbers due out on the 30th of October. The Prime Minister hasn't ruled out changes to negative gearing. Following reports, the government is considering changing the system. Negative gearing is when investment property owners operate at a loss, then deduct that loss from their taxable income. Reports from Nine newspapers say the government is looking at scaling back the system and capital gains tax. When asked about those reports, Anthony Albanese didn't rule out the changes.
I've seen those reports. And what we do is we value the public service. So from time to time, I'm sure the public service are looking at policy ideas. That's because we value them. But we have our housing policy. It's out there for all to see. It's currently being blocked by a coalition of the Liberals, the Nationals and the Greens.
There'll be more after this.
If you are an NDIS participant, there are some changes to NDIS laws you should know about. One is new lists that make it clearer to know what NDIS funds can and can't be used for. For more information about the changes, visit ndis.gov.au/info.
Program sponsor.
The CEO of a Western Australian Indigenous legal service says its new HQ means it can provide support to more people across Perth.
Well, we've had so many people, clients, actually come to our service now. We also do outreach in our community to the different locations, community groups in the different suburbs around. So it's given the space for people to come into our service.
That's Karina Martin from the Aboriginal Family Law Service. AFLS is the largest service provider in the country under the Family Violence Prevention Legal Service Program, with support extending to over 30 remote townships and Aboriginal communities. The new headquarters was backed by the Indigenous Land and Sea Corporation, which donated $3.3 million to help AFLS purchase the building. Environmental groups have slammed the federal government's decision to approve extensions to 3 coal mines in New South Wales. The mines in the Hunter region north of Sydney and near Narrabee in the state's northwest have been given approval to extend their operations for up to 40 years. A spokesperson for the Environment Minister, Tanya Plibersek, says emissions from the project will be considered. Wendy Wales from the Healthy Environment Group has told the ABC it's a backward step in the fight against climate change.
We struggle in the Upper Hunter in Australia really, to fathom Australia's role in putting fuel on the fire of climate change.
Nature lovers are flocking to the Top End to catch a glimpse of some of Australia's most unique species of birds. Shannon Kirkwood from National Radio News has the details.
Bird enthusiasts have arrived in Kakadu National Park for Kakadu Bird Week. The 5-day program begins today in the dual World Heritage listed location. Visitors will hear from a range of experts, including NT bird specialists, while also participating in Aboriginal cultural events such as traditional Aboriginal bird painting. And with Kakadu National Park home to more than a third of Australia's bird species, some of Australia's best bird watching will also be on offer.
To sport, and in the NRL, Penrith star Nathan Cleary says his friendship with Nicho Hynes will be on hold when they meet in Saturday night's preliminary final in Sydney.
Me and Nicho are close mates, and I actually went around to his house when I was injured, and it was sort of just before the origin period, just to catch up as mates, and we sort of just talked a bit of footy, but I've massive respect for him, not only as a player, but as a person. He's a great, great person.
And that is the latest from NIRS News.
Did you know that drinking any alcohol while you're pregnant can harm your bub? It's hard to stop drinking, But if you choose to drink alcohol while you're pregnant, it can leave your bub with all sorts of problems that can last their whole life. Remember, pregnancy and grog don't mix. If you need to yarn about it, visit your local Aponipama clinic and wellbeing centre. We're here to help. Our health and our bubba's health is in our hands.
Station sponsor.
The Tropics Trail by Queensland Music Trails is back. And this year, we're bringing you Dream Aloud Festival, celebrating incredible, emerging and established First Nations talent with an unmissable lineup including Baker Boy, King Stingray, Bumpy, JK47, Kian, R3B and more. Experience the future of music where First Nations narratives take centre stage. Dream Aloud, Saturday, October 5, Munro Martin Parklands. Tickets from just $30 at QLDMusicTrails.com.
Station sponsor.
Hey, Bill and Gunn, welcome to Black Law Tribal Edition. Murumu here with you today, and we are broadcasting thanks to our friends at Bumma Bipra Media 98.7 FM. If you're listening to that inside of Australia, of course. If you're listening to it on the Yidinji Territory, it's via the Yidinji Broadcast Service, and this is a weekly show that has been running for nearly 10 years now, I think. We've got Ganyara and Yirilim here today to discuss a number of things, and I guess to get us kicking off in the right direction, we'll play a little bit from Sky News, that foreign press agency that seems to talk about Indigenous issues a lot inside of Australia, that is. And here is one of their presenters talking about Peter Dutton's announcement that he will remove the First Nations Ambassador Justin Muhammad if he gets elected. Let's take a listen to see what you think.
Another reason the Albanese Labor government is in strife is ridiculous priorities. While it makes a hash out of the cost of living, energy policy, housing crisis, out-of-control immigration and national security, it's preoccupied with woke nonsense. Now, while many of you disagree with me on The Voice, what we all agree on is the Albanese government went about it in an entirely wrong way, making the referendum a left versus right issue, an emotion versus rational one, or a take it or leave it approach instead of looking for some sort of common ground. They're all over the shop on Indigenous issues. We've probed the case recently of the New South Wales gold mine blocked by an Indigenous cultural heritage claim that some Indigenous elders believe was fabricated. I'll have more on that later. But what about the so-called First Nations ambassador? Remember, I alerted you to this just days out from the election when Penny Wong slipped it into a speech.
We will appoint an ambassador for First Nations peoples, and we will ensure First Nations peoples have a stronger voice in our engagement with the world, deepening their long-held ties across countries of the Indo-Pacific.
A First Nations ambassador. Now, the title of ambassador in the diplomatic context, in the foreign affairs context, which is what we're talking about, is very clear. It is a person representing their nation in a foreign nation. In a foreign nation. This is just so wrong, isn't it, to have a First Nations ambassador in Australia? Just a terrible idea. And we learned today, courtesy of the Daily Telegraph, that over the last financial year, the ambassador, Justin Muhammad, went on 9 overseas trips that cost taxpayers $350,000 in airfares and accommodation for him and his colleagues. In fact, his office has a staff of 10 and is funded for more than $13 million over 4 years. What an absolute joke. A position that can't do any good for this country. It can only do harm, pushing confused and unnecessary or contradictory messages for this country overseas. On top of that, it's an insulting waste of precious taxpayers' money at a time of real cost of living pain. Opposition leader Peter Dutton rightly says he'll scrap the ambassador's role if he wins office. So on top of everything else, it's just dumb politics from Labor, setting itself up for failure and just advertising to voters how hopelessly out of touch it is. What we really need is some kind of ambassador for working families. You know, an ambassador for taxpayers in Canberra. Someone standing up for all of us. And guess what? That person is supposed to be the Prime Minister. And he just doesn't seem to get it.
OK, that was Peter Dutton and Chris Kenny. My apologies. I think he's the host there. Talking about, all the taxpayer-funded stuff to have an Indigenous ambassador in Australia. Ganyara, I think, it may confuse people around the world to have an Indigenous-specific ambassador, as Chris there mentioned. What are your thoughts on that?
Everything's very strange when it comes to dealing or the interaction between the Commonwealth of Australia and the Indigenous people that are here. Everything's been strange. Native title determinations, PBCs, Land Council, it's all very strange stuff when you stop and think about the reality of coexisting sovereignties. And this is probably the only position that will make sense now when you understand the Yidingi way. The ambassador will be the go-between the Commonwealth of Australia, because I think that position is created inside the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet, if I'm right, or is it a Foreign Affairs?
I think it's DFAT, a part of it, but it sort of has its own office.
Yeah, absolutely. And you got to wonder why it's in the Foreign Affairs Department. Wonder why there, because maybe we are foreign. The Indigenous nations are foreign to the Commonwealth of Australia, and this is where the ambassador will be the Australian representative to negotiate with these nations like Birragubba, like the Waka Waka Mob, like Yidingi, when they come along in their true capacity as being sovereign nations, of which they are, by the way. The Indigenous nations haven't ceded sovereignty. They haven't had it extinguished. It's still here. It still hasn't gone away. And by the way, they're the true and correct owners of the place. I think the Uluru Statement said that about 7 or 8 years ago, that the Aboriginal people own the place, under their law, not Australian law. So they do need an ambassador. This is what they should be doing, is looking at possibly saving some cash and coins on the PBC, on the Land Council, on those sort of things, because that's all inside Australia. These are Indigenous Australians that are getting some benefit, whereas for the few dollars they cost to have this ambassador in place, maybe he's of a more important role when it comes to dealing with or interacting with someone like Yidingi, the sovereign Yidingi government.
Well, it's interesting you point that out, because I do understand that he did visit the Cairns here, I think, earlier this year, and we never saw him here. So what is his job really? Does Australia really want to liaise with the pre-1770 societies and the governments that they've established or not? And it appears to me that he's either under instruction not to do that. Maybe he wants to, but he can't, because obviously the lack of recognition and acknowledgement, or whatever you want to call it, by the Commonwealth of Australia, that is, other UN member states fully recognise the Yidingi Nation and its government. They write to us all the time. In fact, I've got a letter right here on the table that is good evidence of that. But the thing is that there has to be some sort of mechanism, whether this is it or not. Penny Wong doesn't want to meet with us, and Justin Muhammad doesn't want to meet with us, and I'm sure Chris Kenny doesn't want to talk about us. So it's although Andrew Bolt did invite us on there, and he does correctly identify us as Yidingi and the government and all that kind of stuff. So good on him for that, for doing that at least. But I think it's very important that these things not just appear on the taxpayer card as doing something. And like Chris Kenny there pointed out, it's $13 million over the next few years for his for the Indigenous ambassador. It'll be interesting to see what Peter Dutton would do rather than just say, I'm going to get rid of that. I haven't heard what he has proposed, although I don't really listen too much to the Australian leadership as much as maybe one should, but usually it's full of the same story.
Well, look, they're trying to avoid interaction with the Yidingi government or the Waka Waka government at every cost. At every instant, they don't want to deal with it, because the minute they do deal with it, then they have issues of legitimacy themselves, because they do not have a treaty. They know they don't have a treaty. They don't have a formal agreement. They know that. And when you look at it in a global context, there are quite a number of issues arise as a manifestation of colonialism to which Australia is. So the idea, in my opinion, is to have this ambassador that can be the go-between us and them. You know, they said we exist. Our nation exists no matter what Australia says. They're just refusing to want to interact with us. They know we're here. Native title recognises us. They recognise us as the true and correct owners of this area. They recognise each individual Indigenous nation as a true and correct owner pursuant to their law of a certain area, not Australian law, not Australia itself. This is the important part, so that we are recognised. They know we're here, but they don't want to interact. And why don't they want to interact? Because they're between a rock and a hard place. The minute they interact with us and do a formal agreement with us, that means they have to do one with every other nation. And they don't have that, which means they would then be still intruders upon those territories. So I think that the easy way is to, myself, is to go through that ambassadorial role to interact with us, to negotiate ways forward. How are we going to spread this out across Australia? How are we going to roll it out so Australia doesn't lose its face in the world, you know? And it really is not looking very healthy. If you're in the West, it looks great. But if you're in the rest of the world, Australia doesn't have a great track record, does it? You know, the rest of the world, no. And I was talking to some people from Thailand a while back, 6 or 7 years ago, and they actually said to me, James Cook was a criminal. I said, yeah, well, how did you know? He said, you know, we were just talking casually, and he come there and took the place off them Aboriginal people. This is a bloke from Thailand. You know, you think, oh, they're uneducated. They sit in the you know, rice paddies doing what? But he was very educated as to what actually happened here, you know. How did they get it properly? You know, they're white fellas in amongst all those black people, you know. This is coming from a Thai person. So I was pretty, you know, taken back by how much he knew. And how he saw Australia, how they saw Australia. Australia doesn't have a good track record in Asia, you know. As the Chinese said, look in the skeletons in your cupboard, you know, they don't look really good when it comes to human rights. So we need to build this reputation for Australia that it's not a bunch of colonial plunderers taking the place, you know. Let's work together on this.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, obviously that's happened. But it's about setting the past, as we often say here on the program, and securing the future for everyone. Just because it's happened doesn't mean it should happen again. Yirrkala, I think, you know, the remedy that has been provided by the Yidinja Nation, now the Birri Gubba and the Waka Waka and many others to follow, there has to be some sort of reciprocity from the Commonwealth of Australia. And time and time again we see, I wouldn't say lip service, but some sort of attempt that doesn't even come close to the mark.
Yeah, I know. I've still failed to see if the track record is that. And as you see, that is the past and we're trying to settle it. And yet the past continues to present itself. It may not be in the form of the barbaric atrocities that happened over the last few hundred years, but it's no less disrespectful. You know, there is every opportunity for the Australian government to set themselves in correct legal standing, and they choose not to. So, you know, I fail to see what's going to make that happen. You know, we're doing it what we're supposed to be doing, and we will continue doing it regardless of what they do. So, as we've often talked about, it may simply be that we continue and make treaties with other places throughout the world.
And that's what the Intertribal Foreign Affairs Council Forum was all about. To actually concentrate on those treaties on this continent. And I think that whether that assists or not in the future with the Commonwealth, you know, that's not really our desire or intention, is actually to start building a network of business between tribal government, because that's what we need to do. Our allegiance is to the Yidinja Nation. It's not to anyone else. So developing those things is a must, because the elders have placed that trust in us to do that.
Yeah, of course. And that's, you know, we're not even building it, we're doing it. You know, we are already interacting. We already have agreements with other tribal groups, treaties with them, business agreements, interchange of businesses, in exchange of different commodities, and you know, all these things are going forward at my level with education. We're exchanging those methodologies that have been so perfectly honed over, you know, tens of thousands of years, and reapplying them in the modern sense. So all that's being shared within nations already.
Ginyara, I struggle to see where the Commonwealth can go. We've been doing this now for nearly 10 years or more, actually. But when you think about it, time after time and attempt after attempt, they're still trying to maintain a black presence inside the Commonwealth of Australia, and they do it through, you know, certain ways and means. But at the end of the day, there has to come a time when they're going to have to really come and sit down and cross the bridge to the Yidinji side and begin these talks on a serious level, because we've shown our pathway to a treaty. It was, you know, that and a few other documents, nearly 100 pages long, in 2017 or thereabouts. And it did scare it gave the heart attack to that particular government. But at the end of the day, they know where we're coming from.
100%. We've got nothing to hide. This is the crazy part about it. We've been told multiple times recently over the last few years, Yidinji, you're correct, 100%. And this is coming not from us, not coming from any local blackfella. This is coming from academia. This is coming from the hierarchy, the constitutional experts of Australia saying we're correct.
And not only that, senior cabinet ministers of former governments we're talking about.
100%, you know. So if we're right, the day of reckoning will come. It has to come. Now, you know, Yirilin was just saying how we got interactions with other bodies and tribal groups. I was sat present with one of the ambassadors a couple of years ago there down in Canberra. You were there, and we're more than welcome. We're more than welcome to go into their nation on our passport. We're more than welcome to use our currency there, our currency itself, the Yidinji dollars. And this is a big thing. There's a massive multipolar world developing right at present, and the Western world. Look, I just can't see the Western world staying where it is, the way it is, for too much longer. And this is where Australia must get its act together. Otherwise, it's going to go down the gurgler. The West appears to be struggling at present. You know, the rest of the Southern Hemisphere is breaking away from the perceived North, you know, where the wealth is, the imperial world, the imperial nations. And Africa is really developing a world of its own through all this BRICS stuff, you know. The South America is developing its own world away from the, you know, the United States and all this sort of. So it's all, there's a breakup coming. And if Australia doesn't position itself correctly soon, maybe one of these other nations might want to step up to the role, the plate that possibly could put Australia to the sideline somewhere.
Yeah, and I think that's important. We understand the value of peace. I think, as we have stated many times, Australia has a role to play. It definitely does on the Yidinji nation, for example. But there needs to be this formal agreement or a treaty to kickstart that properly. And, you know, fair's fair. If the UN was there to help decolonise the planet, then Australia should decolonise from the Yidinji territory. What we want to do is keep it together with all our treaty partners and make sure, for not one Australian dollar, remember, we are trying to do this to really help where we can. The Yidinji nation has the law, it has the dominion and resources and the allodial title, which means from the centre of the earth to as far as you can see out to the universe, that's Yidinji's. And from where we stand, the Commonwealth of Australia is our preferred partner to look after the defence of the territory and all those types of things. That's a really important thing to remember. But at the same time, you're going to have to commit, Anthony, or whoever it is, Peter, this is a true gift from the people. And if you can't see that, then you're either deluded or you're crazed. Or you just simply want to destroy Australia and the collective West with you. And that's not a good thing.
Oh, that's my biggest concern, is that as they go down, you know, they start to become a little bit violent and let mayhem run amok on country. And that's the last thing we want, you know. So This is what I'm trying to say to people, that understand the Yidinji way is to understand security of Australia. I can't speak Chinese, for example. So, you know, would Chinese, would the People's Republic of China be the preferred, international actor on our behalf?
They make good phones and cameras and, you know.
I know. But, you know, it's this, Australia has been here so long. Let's work with it. We can work with it if they understand. They understand. They know we're right. They know we're here. They know that they can't get away from us because we are the true and correct owners. How do we get that to them? Do we wait for the old guard to die off? You know, do we wait for the old John Howards to pass on, leave us, you know, and let some new young blood come along and take up the role then to, like Justin as the ambassador, maybe his role is to go and interact. Come and learn the Yidinji way. Come into the office. You know, we're not going to eat you, you know. We're not the savages that everyone thinks, the headhunters. You know, there is a slight amount of intelligence that you can talk to here. You know, we're not some dumb, uncivilized lot sitting out in the rainforest eating snails. Come in and talk to us. And
no, that's the French people. yeah, look, I think it's very, very simple. You either do the job, even in private, like come and see us in private. And you know, there are certain elected members to the Australian parliaments that do that, and we respect that that privacy, because it is a channel that you keep open to keep the information going to and from, that's an important thing in itself. But it has to happen at different levels, and Albanese is the one that has to make that happen. It doesn't appear that he's going to change, despite his pro-voice and reconciliation type banter. You're listening to Black World Tribal Edition right across the planet today, thanks to our friends at Bumba Bipra Media, 98.7 FM. We'll be back after the break.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the show. We're talking about settling the past and securing the future and how Australia might do that. Ganyara, when you look at what's happening with those four nations that were the last ones to come on board with UNDRIP, let's say USA, Canada, New Zealand and Australia, they're all struggling to deal with the original peoples. America claims to have a number of treaties in place, but really, and Canada. Canada looks a bit more... I don't know. It looks a bit more progressive, let's say, on paper. But, you know, usually the same copy and paste template is used among those four nations and many others, you know. But I'm just picking out on those ones because they were the last ones to come on board. But for Australia's sake, I think the sooner the better. And we kept saying this to a number of people that, the Nobel Peace Prize for securing this continent is very serious. And de Klerk got that in South Africa because it was the same thing sort of there. There needed to be some sort of settlement. Even though it wasn't in the form or the vision that we have here, there was still that attempt to do that. And that's where a current or future prime minister would really... go down in the history books for the right reason. It could have been Howard because he told a lot of truths. It could have been others, but they fell rather short of the mark. But there has to be someone there that is willing to put their neck on the chopping board for the future of Australia. And I don't know who's that going to be, Yirrkala, but it definitely needs some sort of sign or movement from that side of the fence.
Yeah, and I go back to what I said before. Like, nothing's really had any impact to move in that direction to this point. And yeah, like you're saying, unless someone with integrity and the desire to do the right thing steps up, it's probably just going to continue along the way it is. Where, you know, Australia wants to keep all the people on this continent under Australian identity, you know, which means they're under Australian law. And, of course, Yidinji's showing a way where you can have a different identity. And under the Yidinji identity, you come under Yidinji law. So, you know, you've got a choice. And every First Nations person on this continent has got that choice.
Ganyara, very, very true, those words. Is it easier for Australia to deal with the tribes or is it easier to keep everyone inside of Australia?
It'd be easier to deal with the tribes. It really would be. That way they've got security of the future. You can just stick with the stay inside Australia all you like, but there's going to be a day come where someone's going to say, well, you better show me how you've taken my great-granddaddy's country. You know, you better show me. Otherwise, I don't think I want to be part of your game. And look, I was actually had an appointment today. And it was a rather interesting statement by the woman that they can't force you to do anything. They can't force the human to do anything. The human has to do it wantingly, voluntarily. I want to go and become an Australian, for example. I want to be an Australian. That means that's a whole different ball game. But they haven't explained it. But, you know, to hear that comment come from a government employee, The government cannot force you to do anything. Think of that. They can't force any Aboriginal to go and be an Australian. Well, okay, we don't choose to be an Australian. And okay, we're going to go back to our law, and there's the old maximum, whatever is on your territory, subject to your law. Okay, who's subject to who? Who's on whose territory? Who's subject to whose law here? Oh, hang on a sec, Australia, you're on our territory. We're going to build our legislation. We're going to build our government. And we're going to build legislation to make a standing army. If Australia doesn't want to do the role and we can't find an international actor, we've got every right to defend our territory. A sovereign nation has a right to defend itself. Do we want to do that? No, because you look at that Middle Eastern conflict that's going on at present. It doesn't look very much, there's not much fun doing that. You know, we shouldn't want to take one life from anyone, anywhere, at any time. You know, we all got the equal right of life on this planet. So Australia, they should step up to the plate, understand the Yidinji way, and I know they do, because we've been told we're right. From constitutional experts, we've been told we are right. So if we are right, let's do it that way, and let's keep going, let's keep the offer out there. But Australia must, I feel that they're having issues of trying to convince the voter base that this is the right thing to do. Because remember, they are 97% of the population are the voters for that side. The other 3% are the Indigenous people, and they really don't support much of that other side, do they? So they got, that's the issue right there. How do they convince the voters that they've got to do this? Do they have to let them old white, you know, rednecks? I come from Mareeba, you know, where the population was the highest no vote in the last referendum, the highest no vote. No, we don't want to recognise them, and we don't want them, and we don't want to give them anything. So you think about the consequence. How do you tell that mob of people there that it's not quite what you think it is? The world is not how you see it, but do they just wait for the collective West to go down the gurgler and, you know, be destroyed, or what do we do? You see what I'm saying? That they might be just choosing the latter part. Just let it go down the gurgler. Let it be destroyed, then we'll rebuild it out of the ashes. But Yidinji government won't be getting destroyed. We'll keep itself intact and alive because we were first and we still are here.
Yeah, I think it's important to remind the world that there is, the original law is back and it's open for business, you know, through the government, that is. I think, too, the most important battle or is for the mind. This is why many Australians choose to now come into this office to create a new identity on the Yidinji territory subject to Yidinji law. And that's where we have the sort of dual nationalities, if you like. So people can choose to use the Australian one, which they do, to get by while building the Yidinji one and protecting the Australian one. So it's a very important balance, and most people understand that when they come in here. You get a few people that have different ideas and, you know, sometimes they don't become citizens. So we have our own vetting processes and things like that that may come into play. But ultimately, you've said it many times on this program, it's a hearts and minds game. Australia can only go so far. I noticed that, for example, stolen wages, a big payout now in Northern Territory, and many other things that are coming on board. But there's only a certain amount of favours or bonuses that you can hand out inside of Australia before people start to say, it's still the same, it's a load of rubbish, you need to change.
I'll have to refer to Ganyara. Ganyara, what is the point on our United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People when it comes to repaying debts?
You mean Article 28? let's have a look. Either give the place back, give them somewhere equal, or, you know, of equal value, or you better pay for the place. Pay for everything that's been taken. Pay for all the resources that have been taken off, the coal, the iron ore, the trees, the grass, the water out the front. You know, pay for everything. Can Australia afford that? Because we actually run this past a couple of senators going back 7 or 8 years. And she said, funny, she said, we can't repay yous. How can we repay anyone else?
One nation of how many? Hundreds. Hundreds.
And they can't repay us. How are they going to pay for all of Australia? Australia is a stolen country. It really is. Or it's been, sorry, it's not stolen. We haven't lost it. We're still here. What it is, they stole our people. They convince them that they're Australians and that they, when they're over there, they've got no right to go back to Article 28 of UNDRIP. You know, we've got to give it all back and pay you for the place. So they stole the hearts and minds of our people to join into that world, which is the manifestation of colonialism. We haven't lost it. It hasn't been stolen from us. We're back. We're doing business. But hang on. What are you doing on our country? How did you get here? How can you apply your law, Australia, to us, to our people? It's about education, about your role. You know, you look at your role as the Minister for Education. How do you convince the young kids now that they're not Australians, that they're not bound by that Australian stuff?
Yeah, with somewhat challenge. It depends on their circumstances, because some kids and many of my friends experience on a daily basis the racism that lives inside Australia. So, you know, it's not too hard to convince them. Others are not probably as aware of this, or plead ignorance or whatever it may be, but a challenge in itself.
So what you're saying is that the young kids can accept this quickly and rapidly. They can take up the mindset. They got the idea. It's the old codgers. It's the old people that really struggle to change their mind. You know the old saying, you can't teach an old dog new tricks?
Well, yeah, we had one of our ministers being interviewed on a national show, and he was being asked to go back to his traditional dress because he was claiming his country as being his own. And you know, I found it quite funny, because here's a person sitting in clothes that, if they weren't made in Australia, which is belonging to the First Nations people, they were bought in through a port that is belonging also to a First Nations people. So it's sort of the logic doesn't quite make sense.
Well, you just mentioned that he had to go back to his traditional dress. Well, your dingy traditional dress was very scant, to say the least. There just wasn't much of it at all. And he would have been locked up for indecent exposure in that world. If he would have went back to traditional dress, they would have locked him up under those laws, but not under our law. But in UNDRIP, they actually say we don't have to go back to there. We don't have to go back to the dugout canoe. We don't have to go back to spears. We can use all the modern conveniences that every other human can use.
Well, did QE2 do that? Absolutely. She jumped on a plane. She did things in accord with the text, the scriptures. She was very tribal in that regard, to the letter of the law. But she also jumped on planes, trains, and automobile. So if that's good for her, then it's good for anyone here on this continent. And, you know, there would have been a time on this continent where no one had a boomerang, but now they have a boomerang. They made one, let's say 5,000 years ago, for to paint the picture. Before that, there wasn't a boomerang. So they're going to say, oh, you can't use that boomerang now because it's here, we made it. But you're right, Yerulam, all those things that come onto the territory through the ports, you know, it's part of trade and commerce. Do you think pasta belongs to the Italians, for example? Well, you know, you might be disappointed if you think that, you know, if you know the story about Marco Polo, etc. So the world changes because of human interaction, but the law doesn't change and the territory doesn't change, especially here. It hasn't changed. It does elsewhere where, kingdoms have been defeated and, XYZ, the history of the planet. But here, it's relatively new because the European context is quite, in modern day sense, is recent. But anyway, I guess we'll move on from that. Ganyara, the most important thing now is we're heading towards the latter end of the year, and there's a number of things that come to mind. But what's been the highlight for you from this year? In terms of a Yidinji term, what's probably one of the standout things for you?
Look, so far this year it's been that forum that you so successfully put together with the other ministers, get it all to come off, bring up the other people, get them into place, the other tribes. Also, we done that flying visit down south earlier this year to brief the world on certain events that we see as very serious. Which I must say also is getting more serious. There's more of this crazy stuff going on in the world. But we're still not at the end of the year yet. This is, you know, we're only three quarters of the way through. There's still a little way to go yet, but that has a few more roles to play there. But we'll get there. But this forum where the tribes come together, where the people come together without Australia's contribution, Australia didn't pay one penny to do that, to get the mob together. And they come from everywhere across the globe, mind you. There were people from everywhere, out of the UK, out of the Caribbean, out of, you know, Asia, out of Australia, and all the tribal nations getting together to talk about this stuff of how we can move forward now in unity as one to deal with issues like this manifestation of colonialism called Australia.
Yeah, Yirrlim, I think from your point of view, there's been a number of victories in terms of education and homeschooling and things like that. But personally, what's one of your you think is one of the highlights of this year?
Yeah, like Ganyara said, it was hard to top the Intertribal Forum because there was so much similarities no matter which nation you were from. And as Ganyara pointed out, we're not just talking about this continent but from all over the world. And yet the incredible, and this has been with me from the start of my tenure here, as well as other experiences throughout my life, is despite all the horrific horrific past that has happened, there is still the desire to come together. And that's what was one of the highlights for me at the forum, that, you know, that was there. And, you know, and we had plenty of tribal nations who were basically going down the Yidinji path, who had large mining companies on their lands, you know. So, you know, it was interesting to see how that was going to be handled. So it was some great conversations.
Yeah, very much so. And I just wanted to remind you, gentlemen, that Bumi, our police minister, has celebrated recently, as of this week, I think, 4 years in the position. A very important role and function, and one that often he says here on this program that his father and his grandfather performed those roles as tribal men as well. Ganyara, obviously, hats off to Bumi for, his service and his time, because that role of cultural affairs and police is not only in his blood, but it's a very important part of the SYG.
The role is more important than what most people can imagine, because you've got to interact between the tribal law, if you understand tribal law, the seriousness of it, and then you've got to come forward into the modern role of like the Yidinji police, you know, where there is no capital punishment, where there is no corporal punishment. So you're going from one where there is some very serious punishment for issues that if perpetrated by those who are, you know, causing harm to someone, you know, there's a death penalty applies for death. You know, it's serious. Is that serious? So he's got to be able to fit in between the role of, oh, that was not, you know, this is more in the civilised world and that not in the tribal world and all this sort of stuff. So he's got a big job ahead of him. And I really take my hat off to him. It is a big job. How do you bring the police together, get them up to speed on everything over the years as new ones come in, old ones leave? He's got a hell of a task ahead of him. Because remember, we're not doing this for Australian money. There's not one Australian dollar involved in this, even though you've got to pay for stuff in Australian dollars to acquire certain stuff, you know. But the Yidinji dollar is working, it's operational, and that sort of takes a bit of pressure off him. But we've still got to live in the modern world, so yes.
Yeah, and part of that modern world is, one of the highlights that I'd like to talk about is the Chavanet Advisor report that came out. It's a Swiss-based company that independently looks at technologies around the world. And out of all the central bank digital currency technology, Yidinji's technology was listed fourth in the world out of the 20 partners that they studied, the top 20 in the world. So when you think like that in terms of the Sovereign Wallet Network and Yidinji Metamui together, this is very, very exciting. Not only that, the Yidinji Nations launched its own computer operating system, which we have here in the office on most of the computers here have. Well, all of them actually can accept it. And out of the four computers here we have in the office, they're all using the Yidinji operating system, Jubilee, Cybers and Jubilee. So these are unbelievable advancements, really, when you think about it. Other nations who even maybe in this space have yet to produce their own computer operating system, especially on their own back. This is what happens when you're in survival mode, people. You actually, there is no other way but out. And that's the Yidinji way right now. It is all hands on deck, and we appreciate all, everyone's contributions. All the elders, we know that not everyone can give their time, that, you know, you are busy doing stuff that you should be doing, and that's greatly appreciated from our point of view. All the other Yidinji families that have to do other things to make a living and to pay for their children and for healthcare and all that kind of stuff, you know, we thank you for your contributions, and to everyone else who assists with this office. It doesn't go unnoticed, and I think very soon the Yidinji story will not only be rock solid here, but around the world, and, you know, I would say in the future we'd be using our own travel documents, and obviously the sovereign Yidinji dollar is already in play, but now with Birigubbo and others taking on this digital money and the platform that we use, it'll be a lot easier to transact or interact with these nations, Ganyara.
Yeah, look, just a little thing on the side where the my office is developing the United Indigenous Nations, which is the equivalent to the UN of the UN member states, you know, Australia and America and all that. We're developing it amongst for the Indigenous Nations, and I've had a very good response from the Caribbean area with that. They are very super excited to see it all come together. So as it does form, not only for here, by the way, it's not only us Indigenous Nations, it could be those in Asia, it could be those in Africa, in the Middle East, in America, South America, wherever it is. And the excitement is there, believe it or not. People are looking for something else to be the representative body globally for the Indigenous Nations, not the colonial manifestations of, I'll keep referring back to what Australia is, you know. It's a member state of the UN. We are not. And they, you know, we don't need to be in there. We're not represented in there because Australia won't do a treaty yet. So we've got to get ourselves together as the Indigenous Nations, and that's where my office is at present.
Yeah, very exciting times. You're obviously bringing forth together nations from a foreign affairs point of view, but also as Ganyara said there, a global input place to meet without all the hangovers of the UN world in terms of the bickering and arguing there.
Yeah, well, there's a real clarity on the purpose, and, you know, I always sit in awe of the amazing people working within our government and other governments that we hear recently, that how quickly they can switch hats. You know, the example of that was just given with our Chief Police Minister, Bumi, switching hats between working in a tribal sense than working in a police sense. You said civilised, I don't know if that's the right term for it, but, you know, working in an administrative sense to deal with problems there, and that happens all the time in this government. And when you talk where it's happening in a international sense with Indigenous nations, it's amazing to behold, because there is a sense of integrity that you don't see in other fields.
Yeah, well said. You're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today. We'll be back after the break with some final comments.
Hey, this is Baker Boy, and you're listening to Radio BBM 98.7 FM.
Okay, that went pretty quick. Ganyara, I guess that in terms of Indigenous ambassadorships, the Yidinji ones matter. We just appointed an ambassador to the Ma or the Gunditjmara territory, Mamakiwawa, who we had on the program here a few weeks ago. Then there's been another appointment of His Excellency in the ambassador to the Darug Nation, or the territory of the Darug, which is in Parramatta. We are about to open an office there. We're just waiting on some of the elders and the mob there to give us that blessing first. But these are exciting times. I you know, the Yidinji Nation is moving upwards and onwards, and people want to be part of it. It's an amazing journey.
Yeah, it's been a long one. It's been a hard one. Don't expect it to come easy. I hope we can break the way or make it easy for those who want to follow along in our footsteps. I also ask everyone to critically analyse what we're doing as being right or wrong. Understand we may not be the most perfect lot on earth and we may be making mistakes, and we want everyone to be have input into this. We're after, you know, everyone say we don't want to be the dominant one and bash the table and cause the world to tremble. We want to work together with everyone, and that's what it's all about. And, yes, it's coming together quite nice.
Yurlam.
Yeah, no, echo that, absolutely. You know, it's about a different approach. And if we keep going the way the things are in the world, we're going to end up where things are. So we've got to improve that, and the UNG is a better way.
Well, that's it for the show today. Thanks for your audience and for letting us broadcast on where you are via the tribal spectrum there. And thanks to our friends Jackie and Maddie and crew there at Bumabipra for all your love and kindness and support over the years. And everyone else who's listening to this program, whether you agree with it or not, that's okay too. I think it's really important to have opinions and critical discussion on these things, as Ganyara said. But we do this in good faith, and we do it because it's the right thing to do from our point of view, is to settle the past, secure the future, welcome everybody that we can, look after people that live on the Yidinji territory, and but make sure that the Yidinji people are at the decision-making process at the very top end of town. Anyway, Gaya Baragalanyunda, may God's peace be upon you wherever you are listening to this program. In the name of Yeshua HaMashiach, for it is written, He is the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. We'll catch you next week. Garu.